Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the presentation of Global Passions Group's results for the third quarter of 2019. I'm Patrick Schmidt, Co-CEO of Global Passions Group, and I'm joined today by my Co-CEO, Christoph Barchewitz, and our CFO, Matthew Price. We will start by taking you through a presentation of our results released this morning. After that, we will open it up for Q&A. I will start by giving you an overview of our key financial highlights and business developments for the quarter. Matthew will then take you through the financial results in more detail. Please turn now to page three, which provides a snapshot of our financial highlights. Please note, as usual, we will focus on constant currency growth rates today. We generated net merchandise value of 434 million euros during the quarter, up 24% year-on-year. Our continued commitment to the customer value proposition helped our customer base grow by 15% over the same period to reach 12.4 million active customers. Our customers placed 8.5 million net orders in the quarter, 21% more than they did in the same period last year. We've achieved all of this without compromising our continued path to profitability, finishing the quarter with an adjusted EBITDA margin of -2.8% and a 3 percentage point year-on-year improvement. At the end of Q3, we now have a pro forma cash balance of 277 million euros. Finally, on the back of our results in the third quarter, we confirm our full-year guidance for 2019. Before we break down the key business developments behind this strong financial performance, let's take a look at the markets we operate in and the immense potential we aim to capture over the next years. Let's turn to page four. We have created sizable operations and a significant customer base across our regions over the past years. Today, we are already leading as the number one player across our markets in APAC, LATAM, and CIS for fashion and lifestyle e-commerce. The 1 billion consumers in our markets spend a total of 320 billion euros on fashion and lifestyle products, a market that is forecasted to grow further with a CAGR of 7% until 2022. At the same time, and even more excitingly, online penetration of 6% in our markets is still very low. In fact, the current e-commerce share in the U.S. is already more than three times higher, and in China, even six times higher than in GFG's markets. As mobile penetration and adoption of e-commerce increases, we have a huge market potential to capture over the coming years, and we are set up for success with our key proposition pillars in place. How we are planning to capture an increasing share of the market is summarized on the next page. We're building the leading online fashion and lifestyle destination in our markets through continuous investment into our three key proposition pillars. First, we provide a superior customer experience, which is both inspiring and seamless, all the way from discovery to delivery. We offer the most relevant assortment of global and local brands to cater to our customers' diverse needs across the globe. Second, we are the strategic partner of choice for leading brands and serve as a gateway to dynamic growth markets. We're able to offer them flexible and tailored business models depending on their structural setup and resources on the ground. Our entire infrastructure, technology, and processes are built around the core of our business, our fashion DNA. This makes us the partner of choice for jointly growing the business with leading brands and increasingly through additional tailored solutions such as fulfillment or media services. Third and last, we continue to build highly scalable operations and proprietary technology to serve as a backbone for our growing business. We have over the years built a fashion-centric operations network with 10 fulfillment centers and 15 regional offices across the globe. Our vast data and tooling landscapes drives our personalization capabilities reflected in appealing and relevant product and content shown to our customers. We're proud to serve the latest in fashion to our customers on a daily basis through our best-in-class apps in each of our markets. Now, delivering on these key proposition pillars drives our decision-making on a daily basis. Let's take a look at how we progressed on all of them during Q3, beginning with our customer experience on page six. We are committed to provide an inspiring and seamless experience for our customers, all the way from product discovery to actual product delivery. We continue to build a differentiated assortment which is catered to local customer needs. For example, we're very proud to share with you that we launched our very first own sustainability-focused brand in Q3 in APAC. Air launched in Australia in September. The collection generated a sell-through rate of more than 20% after the first 2 weeks and achieved a gross margin of more than 60%. We're very happy with the commercial success of this new product line, and we're aware that this is one further step to increase the share of our sustainable product in our assortment. At the same time, we are focusing on the continuous evolution of our apps, which is our clear number one channel. Our sales in the apps grew by 51% year over year, and the apps now generate half of our NMV on the group level, up from 43% during the same period last year. Furthermore, we achieved a total of over 9 million downloads during the course of Q3. Our apps bring us closer to our customers than any other channel. We have further improved product discovery for our customers through great new features, such as the four-row browsing view to scroll through a large catalog of assortment easily, or follow the brand to stay up to date on product releases of your favorite labels. The rollout of AI-powered features, such as Shop the Look, has been completed in APAC and is currently ongoing in other regions. On slide seven, let me share with you how we continued our growth trajectory during Q3 jointly with our strategic brand partners and numerous new brands on our platform. We're excited to share that we launched more than 400 new brands across our regions in Q3. Amongst others, Cotton On in LATAM and CIS, Mango Kids and Urban Outfitters in APAC, Hunter in CIS. Let me call out a few of these brand launches in more detail. We are now the only multi-brand platform of Polo Ralph Lauren in Brazil and of Intimissimi, Berkshire, and Calzedonia in Russia. These examples show how we continue to be the exclusive third-party online partner for major global brands, especially in markets that are difficult for brands and competitors to access due to their lack of local expertise or execution capabilities. To share another highlight of a successful cooperation in Q3 with you, let me tell you how about our designer collaboration in APAC. Together with Rizalman, an award-winning Malaysian designer, we created an accessory and footwear capsule collection that sold out all 8,000 units within a two-hour time frame, reaching 100% sell-through within the day of launch. Let's now turn to page eight. We've already built a highly scalable operation and tech platform over the last 9 years that provides us with a real competitive advantage, but we haven't stopped there. As we talked about in our last results call, we are seeing pickup points become an increasingly important delivery method in CIS. It is not only incurring lower costs than using our own couriers, but it also facilitates top-line growth. We have tested this successfully in CIS and have seen that increasing pickup points in a city generates incrementally higher order volume without cannibalizing other delivery methods. In CIS, we today have over 12,000 pickup locations, which were used for over 45 of shipped orders in Q3. 45%, excuse me. 300 of these pickup points are operated by us under our own brand. On the technology side, our proprietary marketplace platform, Seller Center, facilitated over a fifth of our sales in Q3. That is up almost 70% in comparison to the same period last year. We host and manage over 6,000 sellers on our Seller Center platform, and continue to draw more as the marketplace grows, as the share of marketplace is continuing to grow. Incremental improvements to Seller Center have a significant impact. In the last quarter, we enhanced the platform to make it even more efficient, develop new cross-border and currency functionalities, and build new personalization, recommendation, and ranking tools. Overall, we have made significant progress across key areas of our business during Q3, and I'd like now to talk about how these initiatives have impacted our performance. Let's now turn to page 10. In the third quarter of 2019, NMV grew by 24% year-over-year to reach 434 million euros. 22% of that was generated from our marketplace model, with growth predominantly coming from CIS. We achieved such strong NMV growth by delivering 8.5 million orders in the quarter, up 20.8% year-on-year. We maintained a profitable average order value above 50 euros, an increase of 2.8% year-over-year, again driven by CIS. Let's now turn to page 11. Our active customer base grew 15% year-over-year to reach 12.4 million. Our customers also ordered more frequently, with an average order frequency reaching 2.6 times over the 12 months to September 2019. As a result, NMV per active customer grew nearly 7% year-on-year to reach 135 euros, demonstrating that our customer-led strategy is paying off. We see growing frequency and earning a bigger share of our customers' fashion spend as a key opportunity going forward. Diving deeper into our regions on page 12, we can see how the growth dynamics look across each of our reported segments. Active customers grew the fastest in APAC, increasing over 18% year-on-year. The APAC region, as you know, has the largest population of all of our segments, but includes markets with some of the lowest online fashion penetration levels. So we see significant potential in this region. Overall, NMV grew by 26% in APAC as customers in the region also increased how much they spend on our platforms. In LATAM, the market has been impacted by competitive pressures on pricing from some players. Despite this, we managed to grow NMV in LATAM by 17% year-on-year. The region, which is already our largest by size of a customer base, grew active customers by 15% over the same period. CIS was the outperformer this quarter from an NMV perspective, up by nearly 31%. Improved execution and continued success of the marketplace models with brands has driven this. We therefore saw NMV per active customer in CIS grow by a very healthy 10%. All in all, we are very pleased with the strength of our growth across all regions and metrics. I will now hand over to Matthew, who will take us through the remainder of our financial results for the quarter. Thank you.
Hi, thanks, Patrick. Good morning, everyone. Now let me turn to page 14. We're pleased with our strong, consistent revenue growth. Revenues grew on a constant currency basis 18.7% to 325 million for the quarter and 16.9% to 928 million for the three quarters as a whole. Our gross profits also grew to 132 million euros from 96 million in the third quarter last year. We saw the gross margin in Q3 expand by 4.3 percentage points to 40.5%. There are three elements to this. Firstly, we continue to see marketplace business expand to 22% of NMV, up 6 percentage points on the same time last year, and this benefited the group's gross margin by 2.3 percentage points. CIS was the biggest element of this. Secondly, in all regions, we're able to grow strongly with a disciplined approach to retail price investment. This benefited group margins by 2.8 percentage points and reflects a strong performance in control of discounting, as well as the benefits of some more premium brands. Q3 last year was an unusually weak margin performance in CIS, and so we don't expect this very high level of year-on-year performance improvement to be repeated. Then country mix. and a one-off last year reduced the year-on-year margin growth by 0.7 percentage points. Our adjusted EBITDA margin in the third quarter was a loss of 2.8%, which is 3.1 percentage points better than last year. We don't publish all the details of our operating cost base in Q1 and Q3, but the key points on profitability in the quarter were a 4.3 percentage point improvement in the gross margin, a stable cost-income ratio on marketing compared to last year. In CIS, where we provide fulfillment services for all marketplace orders, we arithmetically see expansion in fulfillment costs as a percentage of revenue as a marketplace business grows. But the fulfillment cost growth is much more modest than we discussed at Q2. The underlying fulfillment cost per package shipped in the CIS are well controlled. Also in Q3 2018, we saw some accounting-related one-off credits to the income statement, totaling $1.6 million, which didn't recur this year. I want to now just cover off the adjustments to adjusted EBITDA. The adjustments we make are for the share-based payment, which was a $0.6 million credit in the quarter, and one-off costs outside the normal course of business. These relate to the cost of the IPO, historical tax adjustments, and the wind-down costs on Lost Inc. Let me now turn on to page 15. We invested $24 million into our physical infrastructure in the first 9 months of the year. This was mainly fulfillment center assets. The key project for this year, the new Brazil fulfillment center, is progressing well, and the main investment in that project is weighted to the second half of this year and a bit into the first half of next. We're also continuing to invest in technology. We take a prudent approach and capitalize a little over 40% of our technology payroll costs. This slide also looks at our pro forma cash. So the $277 million cash position includes IFRS definition cash and $23 million of cash which is either on deposit or restricted under the terms of our RCF. We haven't made any drawings on our 50 million euro RCF. Our Philippines joint venture put in place a 5 million euro local working capital facility which is currently fully drawn. I'll look at the financial performance of each of our regions now on page 16. The ongoing growth in our marketplace business to 22% of NMV means that, as expected, revenue growth lags NMV growth across all regions. APAC continued its strong revenue growth with 24% growth in the quarter. This is supported by growth in active customers and higher NMV per active customer. The region delivered this growth rate with better discipline on retail pricing than last year in both the Iconic and Zalora. So the region's gross margin grew 2.6 percentage points. LATAM saw revenue growth of 13%, which is partly a result of last year's truck driver strike in Brazil, distorting the comparatives between Q2 and Q3. However, we're also seeing a lower level of customer confidence in Brazil and some heightened discounting by competitors there. We held discipline on pricing and delivered a gross margin of 41%, some 0.6 percentage points better than last year. In CIS, revenue growth accelerated strongly to 23%. Marketplace has almost doubled its share of NMV over the last year, and so the gap between NMV growth of 31% and revenue growth is the largest in this region. The gross margin grew 9.9 percentage points to 42% against a weak comparison. A little under half the margin expansion is from improving marketplace share, while the retail margin benefited from strong delivery on sell-through rates and pricing discipline. So overall, we're very pleased with the growth across all our regions and improved our retail pricing discipline while continuing to expand marketplace. I'll now hand back over to Patrick, who will talk about our outlook.
Thanks, Matthew. Would you mind to continue? I'm just having technical difficulties here.
Yeah, sure. So turning to page 18. We're pleased to reconfirm our full-year guidance for 2019. We expect NMV to grow 20 to 23% on a constant currency basis, reaching 1.7 to 1.8 billion in 2019. We expect revenue above 1.3 billion for 2019. And in terms of adjusted EBITDA margin, we expect a further improvement in 2019 compared to last year. Finally, we're planning CapEx of around 80 million this year. So that concludes our presentation. Christoph, Patrick, and me are looking forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel, please press the hash key. Once again, it's star and one to ask a question. Our first question comes from the line of Tushar Jain from Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, guys. Three questions from my side. Can I start with the CIS region? We do have a try-on service there, but yet pickup points are quite increasingly becoming popular. Just wondering what is the customer feedback between those two services. Clearly, pickup point could be slightly more profitable for the business. The second question on APAC, is it possible to give you a little bit more color in terms of the difference between Australia and Southeast Asia, and which has been a bigger contributor to your gross margin uplift in the region? And my final question is on CapEx. Seems you only spent $41 million till date, and you're still guiding for $80 million. There could be a timing impact CapEx moving into the next year. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. It's Christoph here. I'll start with the first question, and then Matthew and Patrick, maybe Patrick will cover APAC, and Matthew will cover the point around CapEx quickly. On the CIS, I think you're right to point out that we are now working quite successfully with both of those models, with over 45% of the deliveries going into the pickup point channel. What we're seeing is that these are quite different use cases for the customers, and so we're ultimately giving our customers more choice in how they receive the delivery. And, the convenience of the home delivery with a try-on is obviously great, but for a lot of people that are moving around a lot and don't want to commit to a delivery slot, having the flexibility to go to a pickup point is also a great benefit. So we really see it as complementary, and that's what the customer data shows. When we look at frequency, when we look at NMV per active customer, and when we look at order growth in cities and parts of cities where we have higher density of the pickup points. From a cost and kind of overall economic perspective, the delivery into the pickup points is, when we have the right utilization levels within the pickup points, more economically attractive for us from a pure cost of delivery perspective. But we also need to take into consideration the impact on, rejection and return rates, the impact on customer loyalty, repeat rates, et cetera. And since it's a pretty new channel, I think we're still in the steering and optimization period around, balancing those two channels. But I think we see an overall positive impact to the bottom line by combining both of these delivery methods.
Correct. Very clear.
Can you comment on APAC?
Sure. Thanks for the question. So gross margin uplift is obviously very pleasing, both on group level, but also for Asia-Pacific specifically. To answer your question, the uplift came roughly equal from Southeast Asia and from Australia. So both regions have improved gross margins materially.
Got it. And are you seeing any kind of a demand difference between, on Asia-Pacific, just to be clear, i.e. Southeast Asia growing much faster than Australia or something like that?
I think you're sensing the right trend here. Southeast Asia obviously for us is a key market in terms of population potential overall, but also growth. And that's why we see a bit faster growth in Southeast Asia than in Australia, which is not surprising given the maturity we see in Australia and given the potential we still see in Southeast Asia.
Got it. Thank you.
And then just to close off on the CapEx, we guided to $80 million this year, similar amount next year. The key thing is actually really the automation phase of the LATAM new fulfillment center. Still pretty comfortable with $80 million this year. If not beyond imagination, a few million will move from Q4 to Q1. But in terms of overall progress of the project, it's really delivering well. It's on schedule, so we're happy overall with it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. As a reminder to participants, it's star and one if you'd like to ask a question. There are no other questions at the moment. Please continue. We've had a few more question requests come through. Our first one comes from Michelle Wilson from Berenberg. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Three from me, please. First of all, just looking at the selling and distribution cost line, it looks like those costs as a percentage of sales increased in Q3 year on year. So if you could just talk us through the moving parts there. Secondly, just on the ongoing shift to marketplace, that's still moving at pace. Is there any reason that we should that won't continue going forwards? And then just finally, we know that Australia and LATAM are break-even, or they were break-even in the prior year. Is there any other area, region, that you could pick out that's close to break-even now?
Hi. Hi, Michelle. On the selling costs, what we've really got going on inside there is marketing. Our marketing is growing in line with the revenue, not growing in line with NMV. So we're very stable on that, but it's obviously expanding with revenue growth. Fulfillment costs. Essentially, our fulfillment costs are growing. We're seeing a few basis points uplift on where the run rate was before, but all that's happening there is in the CIS, we provide fulfillment services for all marketplace orders, and therefore, arithmetically, as marketplace grows as a share, you see some uplift in the cost as a percentage of revenue. But actually, the cost per shipped order in that market, really well controlled, flat or even down a little bit. So we're not seeing any real cost pressures going on in those lines.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Jeff Ruddle from...
Oh, sorry, we didn't finish off.
Okay.
So just Michelle on the marketplace side, I think we're seeing that continue to grow and share. I think we would expect that doesn't necessarily continue at the same pace. When you look at the year on year, we obviously had a very significant increase, and that was heavily driven by CIS, where the proposition with the fulfilled by us model is very strong. But we do expect further share gains from that model.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And then on the break even, I mean, I think you know we're not commenting exactly on that, but I think we've said before that we certainly have the ambition that once we get to EBITDA break even for a year in any region, we stay in the positive, and without any major developments in the external world, we don't want to go back from that. So I think you should assume that that's what we're holding ourselves against.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Jeff Ruddle from Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, good morning. Just the one question for me, but I just wanted to get a bit more of a feel for where you see the evolution of gross margin going, not just in Q4, but really over the next year or two, because obviously it's quite a sharp very sharp improvement in gross margin in Q3. I appreciate part of that is marketplace and mechanical from the mix impacts, and I realize that's likely to continue, but I'm more interested in the underlying retail gross margin. Could you just elaborate a bit about what you mean by improved pricing disciplines and whether there's scope for that to those sort of trends to continue in coming quarters, please?
Hi, Jeff. Yes, happy for that. So with a 4.3 percentage point improvement, yeah, a little bit under half of it was marketplace share. That's fine. I think it's well understood. In terms of the retail margin, we actually had our retail margin move forward in every single one of our regions this quarter, which we're obviously very pleased with. You know, clearly the scale of that growth in the CIS, you're overlapping a weak comp. And therefore, I wouldn't expect to see the same total uplift every quarter going forward. But really, what we're doing in those is it's about getting the really good discipline around sell-through rates, around buying, about choosing how and when to make retail price investment versus marketing. And I just think we're getting sharper at that. We're getting a lot of focus on it. We're using the data we've got. So I think we're pleased with it, and we would hope that we can continue to see good progress on that.
And so you being deliberately less promotional, is that what this is about as much as anything, or is this more about clearance?
We remain promotional. There's multiple types of promotion, and they do differ by geography and time of year and event. Yeah. So we've got the amount that you discount and mark down a product and a range. Choosing how to do that through the prime selling season is clearly something that we're working on all the time. We're improving our data and analytics to help us do it. You know, clearly that's worked really well in the last quarter, and we're delighted with it. You know, particularly delighted with it, I'd say, in CIS, where we had a great result on that in terms of sell-through rate and sales at prime. Giving discounts and giving price to our customers is really important. You know, our customers like a bargain. That's a key way in which we attract them to an event and in which we build trade with them. We're always going to be doing that. Choosing exactly how you do it and how deep is, again, something where I think our analytics are getting better. Our tech is getting better at delivering specific offers to individuals. So, again, you know, we're working hard at it, and we hope to keep improving it.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. There are no other questions. Oh, Tushar Jain from Goldman Sachs would like to ask another question. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi, sorry. I just come back. Well, one quick question on LATAM. In terms of the competitive pressure you are seeing, is it still continuing? I just want to get a sense if there's any kind of a slowdown in that particular trend or not.
So I think what we're seeing in LATAM is obviously different by market. Brazil, as you know, is our by far largest market within that segment. And I think what we've seen there is definitely a good level of competitive intensity, including what we believe are, let's say, more temporary efforts to maybe clear some inventory and you know, get to a healthier position from some of the players in the market. So we don't see kind of, let's say, a paradigm shift in terms of how the market is overall operating. It's always been a relatively competitive market and one where price is playing a big role, so we're very used to it, and I think you know that we've been delivering very consistent margins in that environment. But I think we have seen in Q3 that things were a little bit tougher than they were in Q2, and I think we've also alluded to some of the effect coming from the year-on-year comparison. So if you put actually Q2 and Q3 together for 18 and for 19, you will see that growth rate and profitability is very consistent, so that cutoff effect between Q2 and Q3 plays a role as well.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And there are now further questions. I'd like to hand back to the speakers.
Great.
Well, thank you very much for attending the call. You know, if you you know where to reach us if you have any further questions. Matthew will also reach out for further commentary. And we look forward to speaking to you again in March for our full year 2019 results.